Lizzie sang that up in Fort Wayne last week for special music, and I just love hearing it again, especially this time of year. And we think about those lyrics and what it actually means, what we just came through with the Passover. It hits you in the gut, hits you in the heart, hopefully hits you in the mind, right? It fit well with where we're at today, because we're going to finish up the story of Rahab. This is the reverence for God part two. So if you want to go ahead and open your Bibles to Joshua chapter two, we're going to get back into the story and see how we see Rahab in this wash and clean process, right? This purification of what God does for us through Jesus Christ, through that sacrifice. Just to give a quick recap, if anybody wasn't here, it's been a couple weeks now because of the holy days and because of ABC choir, kind of got bumped back, so it's been a little bit of time. But we started off with the story of Rahab and Joshua, and we talked about, you know, her background, who she was, her profession. She was a harlot. I told you that today, we didn't get into the scriptures last week, last time, but we're going to look at Hebrews, and we're going to look at James today, and we're going to go through some of the sections where we see her in the New Testament, and that it's definitive that that was really, she was a prostitute. That was her background, that was her profession. We also talked about her drive to protect the two spies, right? She was doing something that she knew was for God, and she didn't handle it in the right way. She lied about it. And we went through the process of how God could have handled that. He could have taken care of it on his own. But this is a learning process for her. This is a development process. But she was already showing some core traits of a reliance on God, a fear of God, and this reverence for God. And so go ahead and pick this up in Joshua chapter 2. If you look at verse 12, it says, "Now therefore I beg you, swear to me by the Lord, since I have shown you kindness, that you also will show kindness to my father's house, give me a true token, and spare my father, my mother, my brothers, my sisters, and all that they have. Deliver our lives from death." So the men answered her, "Our lives for yours. If none of you tell this business of ours, and it shall be, when the Lord has given us the land, that we will deal kindly with you." This is an amazing request from Rahab at this point, right? Not only has she helped out these two spies that she know are kind of messengers for God, even though they were spying out the land, she knows there's a relationship that they have with God, that he has with the nation of Israel. She understands that connection. And so that's partially where this concern comes from for her. She sees them, she's protecting them, she's hiding them, she's lying to keep them safe. She's starting to step out in trust, in faith in God. She's stepping out in faith. We've all been there. We've all had to step out of faith a time or two, multiple times. Somewhere in our life, if you haven't yet, we have to go out on faith. We have to step out. How could she have this boldness? How could she come out and make this request? Because it's not just for her, right? She could have easily said, "Hey, look what I did. Look who I saved. I did all these things. Protect me. Spare me." She doesn't stop with just herself. She includes her family. That physical family that she had there, she goes, "Grant me this request." She goes, "I know what you're capable of. I know the power behind you guys." She goes, "Promise me that you'll not only save me, but you'll save my family. To spare us from whatever's coming. Spare us from the destruction that's coming." She didn't quite know what was going to happen, how it was going to happen, or even when it was going to happen. But she knew from history, she knew from the stories, she knew something bad was going to happen to Jericho. She knew it was coming a time where they would no longer have power. So how could she do this? How could she come with boldness before God? I think it's because of the actions she took. We look at the steps that she's been going. She was starting to really learn who God was. She started to recognize what he was capable of. She was coming to revere him. She was coming to trust him. And she knew that he could protect her. So there's a lot going on inside of Rahab at this point. Because up to this point, everything's been stories. Everything's been stories passed on from these travelers, from people coming and going, anybody who's traveled outside and came back. Everything has been stories. But now she starts to have firsthand interactions, and she starts to understand some of God's greatness, some of His power and His glory. She's starting to demonstrate her trust in God. And she's showing that her God is now the God. She's giving up everything else. When you look at society, a lot of people say they believe in God, but when it boils down to it, when it comes down to doing what I want or what we're supposed to do, we often say, well, I'm going to do it this way. I'm going to do it because this is what I want to do. And the world has a really hard time giving up the things that they like, that they're fun, that's easy, and going, no, this is what I'm supposed to do. We sometimes struggle with doing what we're supposed to do versus what's easy, what we think we want to do. Rahab didn't back off. She stood her ground. She answered the call, because this is a calling from God. And she started to understand that this God of the Israelites is the God. It's the true God. And she was going to do something about it. Now, we might say that she actually had a special calling. We have all in this room been called. Whether you're first generation or fifth generation, you have been called. There's been promises that if He calls one, He's going to call the next generation. If you're sitting here, there's been a calling to recognize, hey, there's something different that you're supposed to be doing. She starts to get this call here. Whether that was a specific call to protect those spies, I can't give all the details. Whether it was to overthrow Jericho, we don't know exactly, but we know that there's a trust that she had in God. She wasn't the only one that she was concerned for. It wasn't her own neck. She gets her family in the deal. That's a pretty good family member, right? They're sticking their neck on the line. Because it's really easy to think that they would be like, nope, just you. But she goes, no, the family, all these people, and they agree to it, right? We're going to read here in a minute. There's stipulations to that. There's more action that she's going to have to do, specific actions. But can you imagine what she's going through right now? This is probably the city that she grew up in. Her friends are here. Everybody she knows is from this city. This is her livelihood. This is her lifestyle. This is probably the only place that she has ever known. They didn't travel quite as much as we do today, as frequently. They didn't move like we do. And so this was everything to her. Jericho would have been all of her life, all of her memories. When we think about picking up, I've moved two times in the last 5 years now. Every time we pack up a house, there's memories that are left with that house. This was her livelihood. This was her family. This was her friends. This was everything for her. Everything she had ever known was probably in that city. She was ready to give it up because she understood what God was doing. She was committing an act of treason. She was turning on her own people. She was willing and ready for something different. She was willing and she was ready for something different. She didn't want to be a part of that world anymore. Whatever gods they had, whatever customs they had, whatever their normal society was, she goes, I don't want to be a part of this. I can't be a part of this. There was something that she knew now. She didn't want to be just another Amorite in that city, a pagan city. She didn't want to be part of the paganism where she grew up, the lifestyle that she now currently had. She was willing to be a party in a different people. She didn't realize the blessings that would come with being with the Israelites. But that she started to understand something about God, and she answered this call. She was ready to give it up. We think there's other stories in the Bible. We think about Lot's wife, Sodom and Gomorrah. As they're leaving, they were told, don't look back. Lot's wife couldn't help herself but look back. And we're not, it doesn't detail why. You know, it seems as though they still had two daughters who didn't leave the city. Was she looking back for her family? Was she looking back at the society? What was she going to miss of that? Because that was a part of her. Just like Rahab grew up in this, Lot's wife was invested in that. She couldn't help herself but to look back. There was a consequence for that. Rahab is demonstrating courage. She's demonstrating determination. She's serving God's people. She's answering God's call by putting her own neck on the line. It started with hiding those spies, because treason was punishable by death. She was a traitor at this point. She laid her own life on the line. She started to realize that the relationship that she really needed was with God. She started to see that reverence for God, that was above everything else. She was more afraid of God than anything else at this point. Now, there's a fine line of a healthy fear versus whether she knew the destruction of her city. Again, it's not lined out exactly. But we're given some details that we'll read in a minute that she wasn't afraid of what was happening. We read it a little bit last time when we saw that the whole city was fearful. They were faint-hearted. But we get to follow her footsteps. We have to follow her footsteps. Because we have to come out of society too. We have to come out of a culture just like she did. Don't we have to forsake everything? Don't we have to forsake everything? He says, if you're going to love me, you have to hate everybody else. I would imagine every single one of you who is baptized, you went through that scripture. Luke 14, of when God says, I have to be number one always. We have to come out of society. Whether or not we live in the same city that we grew up in, that our parents grew up in, that our great-grandparents grew up in, we have to be willing and we have to be ready to give it up. We have to be ready to give up our own thoughts, our own actions, our own wants, our own desires. We have to be prepared to leave the physical stuff, leave what we want. Because there's a bigger plan at play. We have to commit our lives to God. We may not always understand the direction He's taking us. We may not always understand what He's doing, because it gets real hard at times. But we have to be ready to let Him hold our hand and drag us through it. Because that's how we feel sometimes, right? That we feel like we know we want Him to lead us, and we just hang on as tight as we can. And every time, now and then we let go, and we look around and we go, well, maybe it's this direction. Maybe it's this direction. And we make a conscious decision, say, no, this is what I'm going to do. But we really have to be ready to leave it all. Because she heard about God. She heard of all the stories. And when He called her, He became her God. He became her God. She put her trust and her reverence into action. She did the same thing that we do today. I guess we could say we're doing the same thing that she already did. She was ready to give it up. It can be terrifying. Because normalcy is what we like. Right? We were joking about, Mr. Turgeon was saying when he was looking out, everybody who didn't have their normal seats. We get panicky when somebody's in our seat when we come in, right? As soon as you come through the door, you're like, uh-oh. There's 100 seats open, but mine are taken. What do I do? And then we start going through the whole thing. Well, they sit here, don't want to take their seat, because then I'll upset them. Don't want to sit there, I don't want to make them mad at me. Right? We go through this process in our head. we start to think, but there's a normalcy that we have that we're comfortable with. Our nice little comfort bubble. And she goes, all right, I've got to give all this up. I want a relationship with this God of yours. She goes, whatever you guys are, who you are, what this God is, I want to be part of that. She's been called for this. And she threw her family in with it. She said, I want you to promise me you can save them too. And that's a good feeling knowing that we have people looking out for us. Because that's what we are. We're a family. And we have to have each other's back. She didn't go, well, it's all about me. Save me. She goes, protect these people too for me. Can you do this? She was thinking about others in a critical time, and that's where we find ourselves oftentimes. Somebody who's struggling, somebody who's sick, somebody who's lost their job. Maybe they're just down. Nothing has happened other than we get inside our own heads, and it gets hard. Life gets hard. Whether it's phone calls, texts, visits, cards, whatever it may be, we have to have each other. Because she was showing the core commandments, right? She was loving God. We've seen, even just in this little bit of the story, we've seen her love for God. This understanding that He comes first. Her trust is put into Him. And now she's worried about her neighbors, her family. It's the two greatest commandments. Love God and love your neighbor. She's showing this. She's showing those already, those traits. Look at verse 15. It says, then she let them down by the rope through a window, for her house was on the city wall. She dwelt on the wall. And she said to them, get to the mountains, lest the pursuers meet you. Hide there 3 days until the pursuers have returned. Afterwards, you may go your way. So the men said to her, we will be blameless of this oath of yours, which you have made us swear, unless when we come into the lands, you bind this line of scarlet cord in the window through which you let us down. And unless you bring your father, your mother, your brothers, and all your father's household to your own home, so it shall be that whoever goes outside the doors of your house into the streets, his blood shall be on his own head, and we will be guiltless. And whoever is with you in the house, his blood shall be on our head if his hand is laid on him. And if you tell this business of ours, then we will be free from your oath, which you have made us swear. There's a couple interesting things going on, right? She's getting ready to send them out. And they go, all right, you've asked for us to save you. You've asked for us to save your family. Here you go. Here's the three stipulations. Here's the three qualifiers. You go, you got to hang this red cord out of the window. You can't tell anybody about it. And everybody has to be inside the house. You go, if they're outside of here, it's not on us, it's on you. It's on their own head. We're not to blame. And then look at 22. It says, they departed, went to the mountain, stayed there 3 days until the pursuers returned. The pursuers sought them all along the way, but did not find them. So the two men returned, descended from the mountain, and crossed over. They came to Joshua, the son of Nun, and told him all that had befallen them. And they said to Joshua, truly, the Lord has delivered all the lands into our hands. For indeed, all the inhabitants of the country are faint-hearted because of us. Because they're terrified. Because this is God working. We didn't do anything special in there. We didn't sabotage anything. They go, they are terrified. God is doing this. And so she has these three conditions now. That scarlet cord, that red cord that she had just hung out the window to help the spies escape, they go, this has to hang out the window. And when all this happens, this has to be out that window. Family has to be in the house, and they can't tell anybody. They have to keep it a secret, right? Can't tell anybody else. I said, if you keep these arrangements, then everybody will be okay. Everybody will be fine. A couple of side notes. It's interesting. How long were those spies in the woods, right? So she didn't just send them out and say, hey, you're on your own now. She gave them advice that, hey, this is how long the patrol should take. Once you see them go back, then you can come down. You should be safe. It's 3 days. What usually goes along with 3 days? 3 nights. Interesting how God continues his patterns. Continues to work through different pieces. This rope, this scarlet cord that she hung down, this flax. It's a linen type of product made, that's how they made this, from this flax. So there's a chance that she actually had a second business. The harlotry wasn't her only business, because this is what was up on that rooftop. And maybe it was dyeing it. Maybe it was actually making it. We're not exactly sure, but it seems like there was an abundance of this stuff lying around. This is how they escaped. I have no idea how far of a drop that would have been from her window down to the ground, but it seems like the spies weren't willing just to hop. The color of that cord's pretty interesting, isn't it? Why would God say red cord? Most times we wouldn't have any concern or care why that cord was red. That's one of those details that we're going, well, that's not helpful. It's just an extra word I had to read. That's how my non-reading brain works. I'm like, that's one more thing I had to read. But that has a really big impact this time of year, doesn't it? A red cord hung over that window. Out the window. As we went through Passover, we understand the significance of blood. Red blood at that. You know, the spring holy day season, and the sacrifice of Jesus Christ being our cover, our safety net, our protection. That red is significant. There's a point to it. And this was during the days of unleavened bread. It's just 40 years later. It's that same time frame of what they were going through. What had just happened those 40 years before? The Exodus, the Red Sea, Passover, all of this impactful time for the Israelites. So you can imagine what's on their minds, because they're getting ready to come into that holy day season. All of those things are going back through, thinking about what had happened. And part of that is Rahab's salvation. A red cord hung out that window. A covering. A protection. She was going to be saved while the rest of the city was destroyed. And that red cord was part of it. That scarlet cord. She obviously believed in God. She started to trust God. She revered him at this point. She knew that he would be triumphant. So that's where she's putting her life. From what we read, it seems like she left that cord, right? What she was told was, when all this happens, you have to have that cord hanging out. It doesn't look like she ever pulled it back in. It looks like she left it out that window. It would have been a little obvious, right? We talk about conversation starters. Anybody who saw that going, what do you got that cord hung out your window for? It's bright red. I have no idea what her story would have been or what she would have told them. But I imagine she could come up with pretty good stuff. But she wasn't afraid of that. She wasn't fearful. She knew that was the lifesaver. That was one of those qualifiers that she had been given. And she wasn't ashamed. She wasn't ashamed to trust God. She goes, I'm going to leave it. I'm not taking any chances. That's their new permanent establishment. And she left that cord out there as that covering. She didn't pull it all the way back up when the spies got down, and then as soon as the Israelites started marching around, threw it back out. She trusted God. She followed that commandment that the spies had given her because she understood that meant safety. That meant protection. That symbolism of what the Israelites did on that Passover, of painting the lamb's blood or the goat's blood on their lintel, on the doorposts, that covering that saved them. It's a symbolic of that. As they're going through that days of unleavened bread process. What was that second thing? They were told they can't be outside the house. Another very similarity, right? 40 years before, they were told you can't go out until morning. She's being told, don't come out of the house. She wasn't even given a time frame. They said, don't come out of the house or you're dead. So she got everybody in her house and she goes, okay, we're going to ride this out. It's amazing how God continues to repeat these things that have a significant impact. Because he's got this plan and he knows what he's doing. He knows who he's going to work with, who will follow his commands. And she reacted and she knew that he would protect her. And she continued to show this reliance on God, this reverence for him. In a way, she started to see her identity through that red cord, through these protections. That's who she was becoming. And just like that lamb's blood protected the Israelites in Egypt, that cord is protecting her. That blood was covering her. She was going to get passed over from whatever destruction was coming. And again, she didn't know the extent of it. She didn't know what would happen. But she knew she could give it up. She knew she was ready to give it up. She acted on her faith. She trusted in God. She trusted those spies. So we see how much action is a critical component of our relationship with God. There's something that we have to do. Very much still based on God's grace. God's mercy. Because that's why there was nothing that she did special. Except for God allowed her to have this understanding. He allowed to make this agreement between her and the spies. There was a mercy there from God who says, I'm going to do this. I'm going to allow this to happen. But then she had to act. Because, you see, it's not enough just to revere God. It's not enough for us to have faith in God and trust God. If we just sit there and go, yep, I believe in you. I trust you. I'm just going to sit right here. Every week I'm going to show up. I'm going to sit here. I'm going to listen. And then I'm going to go home. That's not enough. There has to be action and faith. Faith and action and faith go hand in hand. Belief and faith and doing things. It's the example that Rahab set for us. It's the standard that she established. And it has to happen in our lives. Go ahead and put your little ribbon here because we're going to come back to Joshua. But I want to go to a couple of those New Testament spots that I told you about. The first one's Hebrews 11. Hebrews chapter 11. And I told you we'd end up looking at them, keeping my promise. When we think about Hebrews chapter 11, this is oftentimes called Faith Hall of Fame, Faith Chapter. We have all these wonderful heroes of the Bible. Anybody know how many women are mentioned in Hebrews 11? Two women. Rahab's one. Otherwise, there'd be no point in this story, right? It'd be a pretty lame story. So we have Rahab. Anybody know the other one? Sarah. The wife of the father of the faithful. Who's going to have descendants that number of the stars in the sky. This woman, not faultless, right? She laughed at God. So not perfect. But she had a trust in God. I imagine when Abraham took Isaac up to sacrifice him, I imagine she wasn't completely left in the dark. We can't get two different people, can we? The wife of the father of the faithful and this pagan harlot from Jericho. These two extremes of people. If you look at verse 31, we get a reference here of who she is. It's Hebrews 11. If you look at verse 31, it says, by faith the harlot Rahab did not perish with those who did not believe when she had received the spies with peace. Two critical pieces in there. Probably a whole lot more than two. But it says, by faith she did not perish with those who did not believe. A city of people who didn't believe it. They were faint-hearted about it, but they didn't believe it. And then it says she received the spies with peace. She wasn't afraid like everybody else. She wasn't terrified of this God. She wasn't terrified of these people. There was a peace that she had. It was faith. Yeah, she believed. But faith and belief, you got to have obedience. Because if she didn't have obedience, she would have died just like everybody else. If she didn't follow any one of those three stipulations and be obedient, she would have also died. Her family would have died. The entire city of Jericho would have been destroyed and demolished, and nobody would have been left. Everything would have been gone. She had a trust and reverence for God. Because that means answer the call. That's what she did. She put her faith into action. She did something. I'm amazed that she had this peace. Right? You've got these spies who show up inside your city. You know what just happened to the other ones across the river, right? Just across, she knew what happened to all the other cities. And then these two people from this nation show up inside and she received them with peace. She recognized what God was doing. And there was a peace and a comfort inside her because of that. While everybody else around her was faint-hearted and upset of what was going on, she received these spies with peace. Flip over just a couple pages to James chapter 2. If you look at James chapter 2 and verse 25, this is another example that we find of Rahab being mentioned. Again, defining out that she was indeed a harlot. It's the Greek word porne, which isn't just a innkeeper. And so we see a little bit of her traits already, right? She had faith. There was a peace that she had. And now in James chapter 2, in verse 23, we see another correlation here. Verse 23, it says, "And the scripture was fulfilled, which says, Abraham believed God, and it was accounted to him for righteousness. And he was called the friend of God. You see then that a man is justified by works and not by faith only." All right, so we have Abraham here. He's called righteous. He's called a friend of God. And it says he's doing something, right? There's action. There's action that he's doing. He's not just justified by faith, but there's works. In verse 25, it starts out, it says, "likewise." So this is correlating back, saying, okay, just the same as this, verses 23 and 24. So if Abraham's the friend of God, if he's righteous, and if he's doing works, it's saying, "likewise. Was not Rahab the harlot also justified by works when she received the messengers and sent them out another way?" It's saying she was right there with them. She was doing the same actions. She was a friend of God. All through the book of James, it has this same message. Faith without works is dead. Faith without works is dead. It's a pattern. We can believe in God all we want, but if we don't do anything with it, then we're just like everybody else. We haven't done our job. We haven't actually been a light. We haven't let Christ live in us. Christ was a doer. He didn't just produce meals for people. He was a pretty good fisherman. The best fisherman of all. That wasn't his job. His job was to save humanity. And he's commissioned us to do the same thing by letting him live through us. Letting his light shine through us today. And sometimes we go, well, how do we do that? I don't have a single answer. Because there's not just one answer. We all have gifts and we all have abilities, but we have to put them into action. We have to do stuff with it. But it all begins with trust and reverence for God. Having that relationship with Him, because without that connection, we won't have the action. We can't do it. Rahab exhibited this. She showed us that there can be faith and works. She showed her faith through her works. It's how she acted. It's what she did. And she was spared for it. It changed her life. It changed her life. It would have been easy to try to turn them over because they were in her house. King showed up and said, "Where are they?" It would have been real easy to say, "Yep." She could have given them up. But when they came, there was a peace that God gave her. It's that same peace that we get at Passover when we're sitting there and we think about that bread and that wine as we take it. As agonizing of as a night that it was for Jesus Christ, that's our lifeblood. There's a peace that comes with it. And we look around at each other and we see the relationships that we have, that we've built, that God has brought together. There's a peace and there's a comfort that comes with it, that we're not alone. We're not on this alone. She's in the Faith Hall of Fame. The Faith Hall of Fame. She changed her entire life. She came out of harlotry. She gave up all of her old gods, her old culture. She said, "You are the God that I want to be mine. I revere you and I trust you." That cost something. It cost everything. For God to have a relationship with us, it cost God something too. Cost Him His Son. Cost a father His life. But He was willing to do it because He knew it was for the greater good of the family. It was for the greater good of the family. And so Rahab understood that there was something required. And she did something for the greater good of her family. And she put her faith in action. We can't talk about the story and not finish what happens to Jericho, right? We can't talk about Rahab and just stop there. I mean, we could. There's a lot of life lessons that we've already pulled out of this. But there's a conclusion that takes place. If you go back to Joshua now, chapter 6. Your ribbon should be close. In Joshua chapter 6, we see what happened to that city, the ultimate conclusion, and the end result for Jericho. Remember, this is most likely the days of unleavened bread at this point. As they march around the city once every day, it's a day of the days of unleavened bread until the climax on the seventh day. And so here, if you look at verse 15 of Joshua chapter 6, it says, "But it came to pass on the seventh day that they rose early about the dawning of the day, marched around the city seven times in the same manner." So yeah, every day they were marching around one time. The seventh day they did this seven times. On that day only, they marched around the city seven times. Why? But God told them to. I don't know. God likes sevens. He's got a pattern, right? A pattern again. Look at verse 16. He says, "And the seventh time it happened, when the priest blew the trumpets, that Joshua said to the people, 'Shout to the Lord, shout for the Lord has given you the city.'" So they march around seven times. They shout because they were quiet. They weren't making noise. They march around silent. Would have been really odd for everybody inside, right? I can just imagine everybody lining the city walls going, what in the world are they doing? This is day 7. Look, they're going further this time. And they're just quiet, marching. And the 7th time, they shout for the Lord had given them the city. The Lord gave it to them. Now, it's not just because there's 7 days in a week. That's not the 7. We see lots of correlations to 7, especially in prophecy. There's going to come a time somewhere in the future, we hope sooner than later, as nasty as it's going to be, that there's going to be another marching of 7. Not around a city, but the entire world. God's going to release 7 plagues or 7 bowls on the entire world. And it's kind of like a marching around, right? 7 of these things. It's Revelation 16, if you want to write it down. It goes through those 7 bowls. What each one of them does, these plagues that are going to be hard and nasty. We also have this shout, this glorious shout that signifies the end of that city of Jericho, the end of that society. If you look at 1 Thessalonians 4:16, you know what? Just hang here. I've got it written down. I'll quote it for you. It's 1 Thessalonians 4 and verse 16. It says, for the Lord himself shall descend from heaven with a shout, with the voice of an archangel, with the trump of God, and the dead in Christ shall rise first. It's at this point there are no longer human reign. No more kingdoms, no more countries, no more governors or kings of humans. Christ takes over. The kingdom of God is at hand. The King of Kings and Lord of Lords takes his place. Reestablishes a new society. A global society. I don't know if Rahab at this time understood any bit of that yet. I think most of Israel was confused about a lot of that stuff that was going to take place in the future. But maybe at some point God helped them understand a little bit. I don't know. I don't know what all she understood, but she had enough faith and she had enough belief that she said, I'm going to do this. I know who you are. I know what you're capable of. She goes, my money's on you. And she gave it all up. If you look at verse 17 of Joshua 6, she began to take those first steps of building a relationship with God. She acted upon them. And it says, now the city shall be doomed by the Lord to destruction. It and all who are in it, only Rahab the harlot shall live, she and all who were in her house with her. Because she hid the messengers that we sent. And you, by all means, abstain from the accursed things, lest you become accursed when you take of the accursed things and make the camp of Israel a curse and trouble it. They go, have zero investment in this city. Take nothing from it, have no part of it, or you will curse Israel. They go, don't take any bit of it. We can't take any part of this world into the kingdom of God. There's nothing that we can take into the kingdom of God to be a benefit. What Jesus Christ is bringing is a whole new thing. A whole new government, whole new idea, whole new relationships. It's a different level than any human can come up with, can think of, can put into place. Look at verse 19, it says, but all the silver and gold, the vessels of bronze and iron are consecrated to the Lord. They shall come into the treasury of the Lord. And then verse 20, so the people shouted when the priests blew the trumpets. And it happened when the people heard the sound of the trumpet, the people shouted with a great shout and the wall fell down flat. It literally means it fell on itself. It collapsed in on itself. I don't know if you've ever watched them destroy buildings now. It's pretty cool how they implode buildings. They take these skyscrapers, 100 stories tall, and they basically drop it in on itself. Engineers with explosives have become so good at understanding structure and what pieces need to be taken out that they just fall inside of itself. It's really cool if you've never seen it. There's lots of videos out there. I don't know if it's the little boy in me that just, somebody builds a giant tower and you come by and just kick it as hard as you can, see how far it can go. There's something really cool. And it says this city fell flat. All of these walls, right? Remember, last time we talked about a double wall. Both walls collapsed down in on itself. Complete destruction. It says, then the people went into the city, every man straight before him. They took the city, and they utterly destroyed all that was in the city, both man and woman, young and old, ox and sheep and donkey, with the edge of the sword. God had told them, this city is haram. It's to be totally destroyed. Everything. Nothing left. There's a few things dedicated to God that you aren't to touch. It's not yours. He goes, it's mine. He goes, everything else is destroyed. Don't have any piece of it. Don't have any part of it. Take nothing of it. Points to our lives too. There's things in this world that we just don't touch. We don't have any part of. We can't have a part of. There's things that are solely dedicated to God. Whether it's physical things or whether it's our thinkings, our thoughts, our actions. We have to look and say, are we totally devoted to God? Are we devoted to God? Have we given ourselves over to God? Because that's exactly what Rahab did. She was, you're my saving grace. Her old self, her old life, her old city, old friends, her old society. She gave it all up. It was gone. It was destroyed. There was no turning back. And she was told to stay in that house. I imagine some of the sounds. I mentioned this a couple weeks ago about the sounds that the Israelites would have been hearing on that last night. As God killed all the firstborn, the screams and the wailing, it would have been horrifying. They were told to stay in the house. No matter what's going on outside, they said, stay in that house. Covered by that cord, that's how you're protected. Most likely happened that this aligned with that Red Sea crossing. It would have been taking place at the same time. What happened to Pharaoh's army 40 years earlier? As God spared his people and protected them and got them through on dry land, he destroyed that Egyptian army. He closed up that sea right on top of them and killed every single one of them. Utterly destroyed them. But God protects those he promises to. He guarantees his promises. What amazing connections. The symbolism between these stories. The victory that we see in God's plan. In his promises. We've been promised victory over sin. Victory over evil. Victory over this world. And we know it's going to happen. Just like Edom, Sodom and Gomorrah, Jericho. Doesn't matter which story we talk about. It's going to happen again. It's going to happen again. God is bringing an end to sin. He's already covered sin for those who accept Jesus Christ, not only in word, but in action. By us doing our part, letting him live in us, we see Rahab had a piece of that. She understood that. She understood that connection. And she was saved by God's grace. Look at verse 22. It says, but Joshua had said to the two men who had spied out the country, go into the harlot's house and from there bring out the woman and all that she has, as you swore to her. And the young men who had been spies went in and brought out Rahab, her father, her mother, her brothers, and all that she had. So they brought out all the relatives and left them outside the camp of Israel. But they burned the city and all that was in it with fire. Only the silver and gold and the vessels of bronze and iron they put into the treasury of the house of the Lord. And Joshua spared Rahab the harlot, her father's household, and all that she had. So she dwells in Israel to this day because she hid the messengers whom Joshua sent to spy out Jericho. Because she put her faith into action. She held up her end of the bargain. God brought her out of that cursed city. Saved her from it. God's able to level a city without even a problem. An afterthought. Destruction of a people that don't have a relationship with him. Because he knows he's going to give them an opportunity. Because his plan's perfect, right? He doesn't exclude anybody. It's just the timing's different for different people. For Rahab got a chance here that not everybody does. And she took it. She listened to that calling. And she came out of a sinful people and that sinful world and society. And she grew to respect God even more. She grew to something even better, a better understanding. Because she doesn't just fade into the background. She's got a long legacy now. Because she becomes part of the royal genealogy of Jesus Christ. An Amorite woman who's a harlot in a pagan city. She's in the line of Jesus Christ. It seems that she married one of these two spies. These men that she protected. There's a reference in Matthew, I believe. There's an account that one of these spies was Salmon. Ends up, she marries him. He was a prominent member of the tribe of Judah. Along the way, along their journey, she becomes a full-fledged member of Israel. She gets it. She didn't turn her back out on God once everything settled down. She was all in. She was vested. She became an Israelite. Because she was willing to give up everything else. All of it was gone. They had a child. The child was Boaz. Boaz married Ruth. They had a son named Obed, who had a son named Jesse, who had a son named King David. The line of Jesus Christ stems from an Amorite woman who is willing to give up everything for God. It's a very similar story to us, isn't it? Whether or not we came in from a different religion or no religion at all, or we were born into this, we have to give up something. And when we give up something, we really give up everything. Because we say that there's nothing that can compare to what God is doing with us and what God can give us. There's no other way to become part of the family of God except for through a relationship with Him. That's why this time of year is so special for us. There's a lot of joy, a lot of excitement, a lot of pain thinking about what Christ went through. But the beginnings of God's plan of salvation through the sacrifice of Jesus Christ is uplifting because we know we have a loving God who is willing to give up everything for us. But He wants to see that we're willing to give up everything for Him. And that's where He's taking us. The story of Rahab certainly tells us that. If we give up everything for Him, He'll give up everything for us. We see who she became. She became a woman who revered God, who trusted God, who loved God, who honored God. It started a long time before she got to that end point with that first steps of protecting those spies. She answered that call with action. We have to continue to answer that call on a daily basis. We have to fight the struggles and the urges to let our human nature take over who we are or what we want to say or how we want to act. And we have to say, is this something that Jesus Christ would do? Is this me or is this Jesus Christ? If we, every single time we thought about that, took that moment, at least for me, 50% of the time, I'd get it right. Because that human nature is really hard to overcome at times. And that little extra bit of thinking, what would he do? Because he doesn't knock us over the head every single time that we stumble. But if we grow to fear him, and have a reverence for God, not shaking in our boots, but the fear that Rahab has had of knowing that he could destroy that entire city, but also that he loved her, that he would protect her, because he promised to. Because we have those promises. We have the same things. So as we continue through the rest of this year, right? This is the beginning of God's calendar. The first month of his year. We're coming out of the days of unleavened bread. I put in my pastor's update. Now is the hard job, right? It's easy to look at cupcakes for a week and go, nope, can't do it. Put sticky notes on my own forehead so that I don't forget, right? I'd still forget because then I wouldn't see it. But the rest of the year, we have to make the hard decisions of saying, is this exactly what God wants me to do? We have an entire year of this now. And I know we have at least 4 more years after it, right? 3.5. We know we're at least that far out. And so we have work to do. And it's time to put our faith in action. If we truly revere God.